You know, I actually debated quite a while either to include today's story from Genesis in this year's lectionary or not. I create my own lectionary during the summertime for the coming year. And this story is disturbing. I mean, it is. And you can ask many questions, which I did. And there are many aspects to think about. Today, I'd like to share three of them. So, first is about, it's about parenting or relationship between parents and children. Give or take, when the story was happening in the real time, it could have been somewhat 4,000 years ago. And the practice and norm of the time was that parents considered their children as their possession, assets. And to a degree, it's still quite relevant to many parents. They don't think they're possessions, but extension of their own self or means by which they can fulfill their unfulfilled wishes and dreams. I have met a few of those parents, too. So, in a way of saying, in the relationship, parent and child, how does it work? How does the magic work? Acceptance by the parent and the nurturing and the raising, and a child grows in that love and care. And yet, if the parents would think that my child is a possession, mine. I have right to control my child, not only what to eat, where to sleep, when to sleep, what to watch, what to read, but also how to live, what to be, whom to marry, what college to go. I have to control all of that to a degree, in my understanding, that is actually taking the child's life away from the child. So it is. There's a big lesson. I'm not saying which way is right or wrong, but it kind of made me to wonder and think deeply about parenting and how I accept my children and how I see them and how I treat them. Do I treat them as a human being? Little humans. They need a lot of nurturing and guidance, discipline too, but they are humans, and they are not exactly in the way that I made them. I did not make them. I simply accepted them. So I thought about that aspect in this father and son story. Number two is about God's message and how we perceive, receive, and even interpret the message that is either supposedly or truly from God. Basically saying, how do you know God talked to you? That's number one, right? How do you know? And let's say you know God talked to you. All right? You know. Or you're sure. Then how do you know God told you to go to that church on that Sunday, not the one that's next to it or in the other town? How do you know God told you to buy the red car, not the blue one, or pink one, or reddish blue one? How do you know? How do you know exactly what God asked you? And there is whole spectrum of stories you can collect from ancient wise men to the mystics to the founders of the religion, that their religious experiences are somewhat mixed with some are very truly mystical experience with God, and some are their own perception of them having it. And yet, when it comes to delivering the message, a lot of times it is about how the receiver understands the message. Because In a simple nutshell, I don't think God speaks any human language. Therefore, the message that is coming to us is not exactly in the human language. But yet, that's how we receive it. But does that mean that God is speaking to us using our brain, our language? Or does it because that's how we perceive it? So my challenge is that this story begins with that Abraham was tested. Abraham was tested. And this whole vision, conversation with God, I'm pretty sure Sarah was not endorsing it. So it was his own perception. So was it really that God was asking that, or was it really God was saying something else? But when you're in temptation, are you really sure what you're doing? One sign that Swedenborg describes about a person being in spiritual temptation is that you're confused, you are devastated, and you're depressed. So if you have all those three, do you think you can make a very rational and compassionate decision? Probably not. So that's the second thing. And the third one is, then how do we understand this story? What does it mean? I mean, why is it in the Bible? What does it mean? Right? You have to ask so that we can connect to that right now. Isaac was not just a child. So in the message, okay, there's one thing that is not actually true. Isaac was not the only son of Abraham. Isaac was actually the second son of Abraham. So that's not exactly true in a way. But in another way, it is true. Isaac was the son that he had when he was 100 years old, the son with whom he will receive this fulfillment of God's promise to him. Quite amazing. Not just a son, a child, much more than that. It was like life to him. Isaac was his life. And I was making sure, in another line saying, the one you love. You know, God, somehow this angel has to point it out that Isaac, the one you love. See? So Isaac was the full object, probably his full love. The son. We all have those within us. Something that is the most precious to us. Swedenborg describes it as proprium. What a fancy word. Proprium. A Latin word for man's own or his own. Something that is originated from human compared to from divine. This is in a way a very confusing term because in Swedenborg's worldview, there's nothing. Not a single thing except evil and falsity came from God. Everything else is from divine. Everything else in the whole entire universe is marriage of good and truth, which is from God. Everything except evil and falsity. And man, human, claims, this is mine. This is from me. This is not from God. What is that? So, connecting that to our New Testament story, Jesus is saying, if you want to follow me, you have to take your cross on you. You know basically what that means literally in those time and day. You have to accept the most humble death that's possible. Because, you know, crucifixion wasn't, you know, was really, really humbling death. In a way of saying, somehow you have to give up the life that you cherish in order to receive another life. Kind of same thing happens in Buddhism, Confucianism, and Taoism. They're not religious though. These three are, Buddhism is arguable, but Confucianism and Taoism are definitely not religious. But all of them are saying, simply, in order to fully receive the life that nurtures, that enriches, that amplifies life, you have to empty something. That's called, this is ego. Or, in a way, egocentric, narcissistic view of oneself. That I am the center of the universe and I deserve everything. That there is that within us, all of us. And when we are willing to give that up, empty that out, as much as we empty, that much something from God, divine, fills us up. That's kind of the promise. I think I like that one. So one of the signs about this is that, you know, we all want to be good. We all want to be happy. We all want to do something good. Yet, how many of you can really confess before God that when you do something really good, does that really make you delightful and happy and joyful more than when you're watching your favorite shows or your favorite sport or your favorite games or playing with your favorite friends? Most likely a little less than that. Or even sometimes serving others, working for others, usually involves pain and burden. And sometimes even you will say suffering. Because a part of me is being sacrificed. My time's gone, my energy's gone. Right? Sometimes my money is gone to do that. Yet, willing to accept that and emptying it out, there's a fulfillment coming within. And that's the beauty. And that's something that I cannot guarantee you. God is guaranteeing. But I don't guarantee it because I don't know what you're doing. But God knows what you're doing. And there's a beauty in the connection in this mystical union, relationship between us and God. So that's the third message that I somehow entertained and meditated upon. May God bless us all at this moment in this sharing and your mindfulness of being here and connecting each other and sharing with each other. Amen.
Amen. Amen.